On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction. Joining me as always, or it doesn't seem like as always, but as always over the last 5 years now, is Dan Trelauer with IC360. Dan, good morning. How are you?
Man, 5 years. That's crazy. I'm doing great, Craig. It's good to be back with you, man.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And IC360, I should mention, is that independent auditing group that has been so instrumental in helping the leagues and most recently the UFC discover flagged wagers that might have indicated some improprieties with the outcome of either, in that case, you know, mixed martial arts, but obviously with the NBA as well and, you know, college sports. They're doing great work in that regard. Joining us now is a fellow gambler in recovery. This is Dave. Dave, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. What was the date of your last wager?
10/27/22.
Great. Congratulations. So you just passed your three-year anniversary. I imagine life is a lot better now than it was 3 years and a couple days ago.
Yeah, I did. And, you know, life gets better every day away from the bet. So thank you.
No doubt about it. All right, let's tell your story here a little bit. We always start with when and where were you, how old were you when you first were exposed to any type of wagering and, you know, well before it ever became a problem for you.
So for me, it was the racetrack, and I got to go with my grandfather as well as my dad. And I grew up out west in Arizona, but I went to Del Mar. And then in the summers, I would come to the Jersey Shore and go to Monmouth Park with my grandpa. And, you know, I was innocent. You know, I would just watch the horses, watch them come around the track and the turn. And, you know, my grandfather gave me, you know, a couple bucks to bet. I ended up hitting a trifecta. I don't know what he did, but, you know, made a lot of money. There was a lot of money in front of my hands, maybe 7 or 8 years old. And, you know, that action and just that feeling. I mean, obviously, I never replaced it since then, but that's what I always chased. So,
when you look back on your life with the clarity you have now, was that the impetus where you fell in love immediately with the notion, at least in that case, of horse racing, but wagering and having a big win?
Yeah, definitely. You know, turning something very small and minute to, you know, something pretty crazy. And then, you know, as I grew up, you know, got into poker and the Chris Moneymaker, you know, scene, party poker and all that stuff. So simplified, you know, always enjoyed the action. You know, sometimes the escapism as I got older and didn't want to deal with realities of life. And, you know, it just kind of parlayed, no pun intended.
Dan, let me bring you in on that because we've had a good deal of guests on this show who referenced the Chris Moneymaker World Series of Poker win, which made everybody that played, you know, the basement game on Friday nights with their buddies or family members suddenly think, well, if Chris Moneymaker can win, I can win. And it's really the single biggest event in the explosion of poker, both online and in poker games around the country. I'm wondering in your experience and in your background, if people that see other people win significant sums of money, if your research has shown that for a lot of people is the entry point to think that they can copy what they just saw.
I think that's one of several entry points. You know, it's that early exposure. It's not seeing the negative. So that therein lies your point. Like, okay, I see other people having fun. Other people are winning. What's the harm? I'm not hungover the next day. There's no smell. There's no track marks. And, you know, it looks like a fun time. Everyone's laughing. Why wouldn't I want to have fun and feel good? And I think we're seeing this now. If I remember correctly, I think Drake's organization just had a lawsuit filed against him in one of the states saying, you've got to stop doing business because all he's doing is promoting the good part of gambling and people are getting a wrong impression. So marketing, advertising, it all plays a big role. And Moneymaker, I mean, couldn't ask for a better situation. The guy's name, poker, was huge. And so, yeah, it plays a huge role as one of the many factors that can lead someone to have a problematic relationship.
Yeah, I thought it might. Dave, let me get back to you and your story. Walk me through where you went from 7, 8 years old. How quickly and how old were you when you look back on it, where gambling became an important part of your life?
So for me, I got to work with the horses on the backside, and the so for me it was actually, you know, 14, 15, 16 when I, you know, got to work with the horses, and then I actually ended up in the front office setting up the races. So I thought I was smarter than the other people because I knew what horses, you know, were actually part of the conditions. And then also my senior year, I moved to Jersey, and then I would just shoot down to Tropicana, or actually Taj Mahal back in the day, and then play poker when I was, you know, 17, 18. So I would sneak in there, and I remember losing, you know, $500 aces versus aces, and got cracked with a flush. But, you know, it was always early, and then I always just, you know, kept going. I couldn't get out of my own way, you know, until recently. So
how old were you when it became a problem?
It was definitely a problem in my 20s and, you know, into my 30s, and I just never dealt with it. You know, I always would just, you know, work as hard as I can. And then it was a cyclical cycle where I'd get paid and then just, you know, dump money either at the track or playing poker, or, you know, trying other games.
Right. You mentioned when we first started this that you used gambling, your words, not mine, as escapism. You know, I did something similar. I think Dan has expressed he did something similar, you know, post 9/11. Yep. What were you hiding from, if you don't mind me asking?
I wasn't hiding really from anything. It was more just, you know, I actually enjoyed, and you guys can, you might be able to relate with this, just the loneliness and being able to just kind of separate and not even deal. Like, obviously, we have cell phones now, and, you know, if you post something on social media, everybody knows where you are. But, you know, you just escape to either the track or, you know, a casino, or just, you know, get away, and then nobody knows about it. So it's also almost that secrecy thing too, sure. You know, and, you know, the joke about breaking even, obviously, you know, that as well.
So I know we got to take a break coming up here in a second or two, but walk me through at the height of your gambling disorder, give people an idea of what you were doing, how often you were gamble, you know, hours in a day, days in the week, that type of thing. So people can get a real good handle on how sick you were at the height of your disease.
I mean, definitely at the height of it, it was every day. And I was never an online gambler, an app bettor. So I would always either go to the track or the casino. And it was almost the rush of, you know, the anticipation of going there to the place. So that was my story. And it got to where it was every day, you know.
Right.
I'd work and – sorry, go ahead.
No, good. I'm trying to figure out – I will get to it after the break for sure – but I, along the way, I'm imagining, I don't want to put words in your mouth or change the experience. You had to have had, I assume, financial troubles and made bad decisions with money. Did you ever, you know, have experienced that where, you know, you borrowed from the wrong guy, stole from this guy? Like, how did you handle the financial aspect of gambling every day?
I was lucky because I had good jobs that paid well. So I never actually had a bookie or got myself into any trouble. And then for me, I would always put away just a little bit of, money for the bankroll. So I'd always keep myself, and that's kind of how I, you know, I would spend $200, $300, $400, and that was as much as I would spend. And then at the end of it, I would, you know, borrow from family and friends and just get into it. But I never got into bookies or anything like that.
Got it. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll continue on with Dave and Dan Trelawer right after this.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Dan Trelawer, of course, IC360. They are the company that is credited, rightfully so, with helping us unearth some of these gambling scandals, or at least the allegations of gambling scandals. Good to have Dan, as always. And Dave joins us, a gambler in recovery. You know, many of us, Dave, do have a bottom-of-the-barrel moment. Some of us, it's getting arrested. That's my story. That's Dan's story. Other people, you know, a spouse comes into the room and, you know, the jig is up, or they may have stolen money from the workplace. You know, a variety of stories that usually brings the gambling to an end, an immediate end. And I'm wondering, prior to you getting the help and getting into recovery 3 years ago, do you have a story or something similar that resulted in it being the last time you wagered? Do you have what we refer to as a bottom of the barrel moment?
Mine was, I was actually, you know, on my way out to visit family Arizona, and you know, I was starting the path of recovery, and I have a toddler, and I actually didn't know it, but I got kicked out of, you know, the ex-wife's house, which it is what it is, but I always left my keychain up on, you know, a bookshelf, and she ended up taking the key away. And you know, Halloween is my favorite, but the 10/27, 3 years ago, you know, I came back to the house around 2 or 3 in the morning and I didn't have a key. I didn't realize it, you know, and that was my bottom of the barrel. And, you know, she wouldn't let me back in, and I ended up sleeping in my car for, you know, a couple of days, couple of weeks, and just, you know, working with family and friends about a spot on the couch or a spare bedroom. So that was my bottom of the barrel.
Did she not let you in? And I don't want to pry, so please tell me to stop if you want. Was it because of the gambling, like she had gotten tired of it? Or did the gambling just lead to other marital issues that we don't have to get into?
A little bit of both, definitely, you know. But she was at her breaking point, and understandably, you know, looking back at it now, I made my mistakes, and you know, I've tried to rectify it, and we're in a decent spot now. But, good, you know, I was definitely at my worst, and, you know, going to Monmouth Park or going down to Atlantic City and just, you know, hiding away, as they say.
So when that happens and you're locked out of the house and now you're estranged from what turns out to be your ex-wife and obviously a child, which is devastating, how did you process that in the days or weeks right after? Did you run to gamble because of the escapism it gave you earlier in your life, or did you make a vow literally that night, okay, I'm going to get myself right because I want to have a relationship with my child and even potentially reconcile with my ex-wife?
So for me, it was actually, as worse as it was, it started the recovery journey, you know, and I just needed that to, like you said, hit the bottom of the barrel. So now I fully enjoyed, you know, time with my kiddo, either at the shore on the beach or just random adventures, you know.
Was there any point of view, Dan and I talk about this a lot, and I don't know if you would have felt it in the moment because your story is a little bit different than mine and Dan's. Was there any part of you in the moments shortly after that event happened where you almost felt relief that you could now start a life without gambling, that pivotal moment in your life was the impetus to actually live a healthier life, or did you not process that or feel the tangible feeling of relief?
No, I definitely was, you know, almost that aha moment. Like, you know, I've done all the bad things that I've done. I mean, me and you, we can talk about the financial aspect, and gambling really isn't the financial aspect, but I was at the lowest point and I just was destroying myself and my family at the time.
Yeah,
I can see it now. And, you know, I'm in a good spot now. Not the greatest. I'm still working on myself and,
sure,
you know, the relationships. But that, you know, moment definitely, you know, it took me a while to process, obviously. But I never went back to gambling, and I've stayed away since. And, you know, I have other drives and other hobbies now. So I just take the time for things that I find myself now and I enjoy life and what I can do.
You know, Dan, that's the most powerful part of this, that, you know, we'll talk after Dave leaves us for a moment about what happened in Dallas last night, because I think it's important to talk about mental health as a part of gambling addiction. But what he's talking about is the powerful part of recovery. And when you're in the middle of it and you haven't gotten to the other side of it, it's hard to see the light that recovery is possible. And now 3 years into it, Dave is doing well. Not perfect, but doing much better, Dan. And that's the thing you and I always try to strive when we do this show, that you can get to the other side and there's an amazing life worth living.
In the moment, it seems like nothing's worth living for because you have this relationship with gambling and it's the only thing that matters. And then when you get into recovery, you realize all the things you were missing and sometimes taking for granted. And it's hard, right? Because you start to see clearly. That's a phrase you always use, Craig. It's like, you know, looking back with clarity. But in the moment, we can't look with clarity because it's an emotional issue. So we're acting on emotion, and the rational brain can't compete with the emotional brain. So this show, like now for 5 years, is trying to give people a voice so that they can share their story so others can hear that they're not alone and that there are other, and there is a path to recovery, and it's a beautiful life.
Yeah, Dave, you need to hear this, and I hope you take it for what I mean it for. I'm really proud of you. And you know, you should be proud of what you've done. It's not easy. And your acknowledgement that life's not perfect and you still have hurdles to climb. I do too. Dan does too. You know, many of them are relationship based. Some are financial based, you know, but living a life of recovery, and it doesn't mean you have to, you don't have to become a preacher about it, but living life without gambling has given you the opportunity to have 50, 60 years of joy. It doesn't make everything perfect. There are some relationships you're never going to get back, but you need to hear from other people who've lived it that they're proud of you because what you've done is remarkable. You know, to go from gambling being such a big part of your life that cost you relationships, you know, for a short amount of time for sure with your child, you know, cost you a marriage, and I'm sure a lot of other things, to have now made it over 3 years without gambling and committing yourself to this amazing life with great joy in it is something you should be proud of. And I'm wondering if you acknowledge that, if you accept that type of praise for what you've done here in the last 3 years.
Oh, I definitely will accept it. And I am proud of my accomplishments. You know, it's like you said, the bottom of the barrel. And when I celebrated, then it was great because some of the people that I, you know, immediately connected with, saw me at my worst spots too. And, you know, with the rooms, with recovery, with other people, I was able to do it. And that's the, you know, the message as well as, you know, with the show, it is attainable. It is possible. You know, like you said, it's not perfect, but I am truly grateful and appreciate life. And yes, I am proud of myself. So thank you. Good. And, you know, anybody that is in recovery, obviously it's day to day, the raw emotions, the triggers, you know, the surges. But, you know, to be proud of yourself or your accomplishments as well as, you know, in a group unity, that's what, you know, recovery is all about.
Well, you keep doing what you're doing. It's important for people like you and us to share our stories. And I'm grateful that you had the time to share with us tonight and look forward to meeting you in person one day. And keep doing what you're doing because you're doing great work. And thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, great job by Dave. Dan, before we skedaddle here for the weekend, you know, obviously we all found out on Thursday morning that a former Dallas Cowboy, Marshawn Nealand, sadly took his own life. And we talk on this show probably more than any show that I'm aware of about mental health and about suicide. It seems like it's an action word and people are afraid to say it. You know, gambling addicts have a much larger rate of suicide than any other addiction on the planet. And I wanted to express to people, and I did this on social media a couple days ago, I want people to understand how dark and how depressing life can be for some people. And I don't think Marshawn had a gambling problem, but we can relate to that darkness. For him to make the decision that dying literally on the floor of a porta potty was a better alternative than waking up tomorrow, you brought me back to a dark place I was in seven some odd years ago when I contemplated something similar, not waking up tomorrow. And I don't think we spend enough time talking openly, especially amongst men, about mental health and about, you know, depression and our feelings of the world caving in on us, the darkness, not seeing an out or a way out of a situation and recognizing that tomorrow will be a better day. And I just thought it was important for you and I just to have a quick back and forth in conversation so that people hear people on the radio openly talking about mental health. You know, there's an old stigma that, you know, real men don't share their feelings. They're not vulnerable. They don't cry. Yeah, and it's an old like 1950s way of looking at how men are supposed to behave. But the reality is that I think, and I was terrible at it, and I'm not great at it today, full disclosure, but I think the real tough guy, the real hardcore man's man, is the guy that does open up and show his vulnerability and ask for help and recognizes that not everything in his world is going smoothly right now and needs a shoulder to cry on or a buddy to talk to. And because of all the work you do and we've done together here in the last five or so years, I just thought it was important for you and I to have a comment on mental health, specifically for men, and the reality that there is help out there. And I can tell you as a fact that I would not be here today doing this show or doing anything if I didn't pick up the phone and call someone when I was at my darkest moment. And I know you've had certain moments like that and certainly have counseled dozens and dozens of young men who have had similar experiences, and I thought it'd be important for you to just chime in on that for a moment.
you know, we were talking about mental health. I was down this past week, you know, traveling all around the country. I was down in Oklahoma State. I was out in northern Colorado and, you know, just continuing to hit various schools. And, you know, we talk about mental health a lot because from an athlete's perspective, you know, and we're not saying that this was a gambling related to your point. We have no idea. We're not suggesting that. But the pressures that people face today in society because of technology, because of their role, their status, if they're playing sports, it doesn't matter what your job is, doesn't matter what you do for a living, mental health matters. And as soon as you start getting locked up in that mental prison, and that's something I say, Craig, all the time, when I'm sharing my story and being vulnerable, it almost gives people permission to be vulnerable back. And I know you've experienced that when you go to college tours. People feel like they can let the wall down because someone else is being vulnerable. And after September 11th, I never realized this, but looking backwards, that was the day I got locked up in my first prison, and that was mental prison, because I could not figure out a way out of it. Yeah. And that ultimately led to just isolation, figuring things out myself, bad decision-making, and then the gambling as a way to cope and escape. And, you know, it's just mental health is one of the biggest issues that we see. And people with gambling disorder have some of the highest rates of suicidal ideation, attempt, and completion. And so we have to talk about it. Your mental health is, that's like letting somebody live rent-free in your brain. We just have to keep that space as clean as possible as much as we can.
Well, I want to encourage people, if you are feeling a certain way, there's obviously hotlines you can call. There's also an app that our friend Ryan, who's in Long Island, started called HeyY, H-E-Y-Y, and that's 24/7. People are standing by just to talk to you and help you through a down moment, a down night, and then connect you to mental health professionals that can take over from there. So there are outlets out there, and he's with a company called FISH, which stands for Faith, Integrity, Strength, and Honor. And are close friends of ours on the show and mine personally. So there is an app, again, HeyY, that you can download for 24/7 mental health help if you are feeling a certain way. And it's okay to ask for help. It is. It's okay to pick up the phone and reach out to somebody when you're not feeling right. And I hope that many of you will encourage your loved ones to do that, or if you're the one that's feeling a certain way, that you'll do it as well. Appreciate your time as always, Dan. We'll do it again next week as we're getting close to my favorite holiday, Thanksgiving, but recognizing that, you know, gambling isn't going anywhere. Gambling addiction isn't going anywhere. And as long as they allow us, we'll continue to do this show to try to shed light on what addiction looks like and help fellow gamblers get into recovery and then through recovery. And always appreciate your time, pal.
Thank you, brother. Always good to be with you.
Thanks so much for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig. More WFN Sports commentary and content coming up right after this.